Thanks tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden era. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levionier. Stay tuned for Romance in this hour. Later on, we'll hear the show Romance from 1952, but right now it's the La Rosa Hollywood Theater of Stars with the play It Takes Two from March 31st, 1949.
Thank you very much. And greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. This is C.P. McGregor speaking. Welcome to the La Rosa Hollywood Theater of Stars, radio's greatest daytime dramatic program. Every day, a complete 30-minute drama from Hollywood. Every day, a famous Hollywood star. Today, our star is Ann Jeffries, and the title of our play, It Takes Two. You might say that this story begins where others end. A little church, a happy crowd, rice, confetti, and oh yes, there's the usual tin cans, old shoes, and just married sign on the back of that swank convertible parked by the curb. But come on, I want you to meet that handsome fella at the wheel. He's the guy who just said...
I do. Yep, I'm the guy, Bob Bingston. Or rather, I should say I'm the groom. Because there's my bride, right over there. The gal all those fellows are kissing for the last time. I hope. Susan's her name. Susan Adams. Susan Bingston, now. Oh, you love Susan. Oh, we've got to get going.
Come on, darling. Papa's waiting.
Here she comes. Isn't she cute? So sweet and understanding.
Goodbye, everybody.
Never an angry word.
Goodbye. Goodbye, Susan, dear.
Come on, Bob.
You didn't have to blow the horn. I was coming.
Oh, but Susan, sweetheart, I...
Never mind. Goodbye, Alice.
Goodbye.
I'll try to write. Goodbye, David.
Goodbye, Susan.
This is it, darling.
Yes, our funny, lazy little road. It's just the same as always.
Yep, except that we're Mr. and Mrs. Robert Bingston now.
Mr. and Mrs. Robert Bingston. 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 Susan Bingston.
Sounds kind of nice, huh?
Not bad.
Not bad. We Bingstons have done all right with it.
Oh, of course. And we Bingstons will do all right with it, too.
Ah, that's better.
Bob.
Yeah?
Well, there's something we should promise each other right now.
Yeah?
That we'll remember, well, that most fights start over little things. Little unimportant, thoughtless things.
I know. And anytime I do anything you don't like, I want you to tell me about it. Right out. I'll do the same.
You won't fly off the handle?
Well, what for? Why, there'll probably be lots of little things. You know, like leaving the cap off the toothpaste. Hiding behind the morning paper. Dropping ashes on the rugs. That's something I'll have to watch. Ah, don't worry, honey. I know.
I really think you do. I probably don't even have to explain why I was annoyed with you right after the wedding.
The horn. I blew the horn.
Oh, well, that wasn't all of it, Bob. After all, I was in a hurry to get away, too, but... Well, I think you could have been a little warmer towards my relatives. They weren't going to bite you.
Your relatives? Honey, I didn't marry them.
I know, but some of them were meeting you for the first time.
Maybe even for the last, huh?
Bob!
Oh, I'm sorry, and I do understand. Now, let's skip it, shall we? Remember, we don't want to quarrel on our honeymoon.
All right, but, well, those are the sort of little things I meant. Just thought I'd point them out, because, well, getting started right is half the battle.
Don't even say the word. We're married now. Married people don't fight.
My mother and father were married.
Never heard a word between them.
Then you haven't lived. Didn't you ever notice when you were over to dinner that there isn't a complete set of dishes in the house?
What? You mean your folks that threw dishes at each other?
They weren't playing baseball.
Oh, no, I don't believe it. Why, anyway, it won't happen to us. Well, I couldn't get mad at you no matter what you did.
Then we haven't a thing to worry about, darling. Because like we agreed, it takes two to make a quarrel. And I'm certainly not the quarreling type.
Ah, Almost to the hotel. Just another mile.
Oh, wonderful.
Oh, I can't wait to loosen this blamed collar. Choked me all through the ceremony. Almost couldn't get the magic words out.
Well, aren't you romantic? Do you mean to say that all through the ceremony you were just thinking about how tight your collar was?
Oh, but the whole outfit's tight. Your father's a full size smaller than I am.
A fine way to talk. And after Dad was nice enough to let you wear it, why, that's his best morning coat.
All right, so it's his best morning coat, and it's tight enough to make anybody mourn.
Funny man.
Well, I am, in this monkey suit.
It isn't a monkey suit. The best man wore one, and he didn't complain.
The best man, the best man.
Oh, I think David looked very handsome.
Fine, so David looked very handsome. Why didn't you marry him?
Well, if you'd have had... Well, it would have been all right with that blonde bridesmaid.
What's wrong with Betty?
Dear Betty, who just had to kiss her itsy-bitsy Bobsy once for the day, once for the future, and once for old time's sake. Say, what kind of old times did you two have together?
There you go, looking for trouble. It's a wonder we didn't start fighting at the altar. When I said I do, I'm surprised you didn't say, oh, no, you don't.
You can't talk to me like that, Mr. Bingston.
I am talking to you like that, Mrs. Bingston.
Then you can keep your silly old name. Turn this car around. I want to go home.
Good, that's just where you're going, and I'm darn glad to find out before... Oh, wait a minute. Susan, what's come over us? We're fighting.
You bet we are.
Oh, but we can't, darling. Remember, it takes two to make a quarrel.
Well, there's two of us.
Susan.
Will you turn this car around? I want to go home, I tell you.
But there's the hotel just ahead of us. We have to go there. It's our honeymoon. And, well, I love you. And we've got a reservation.
I don't give a darn about your old reservation. You Indian. Don't you dare turn in. I won't budge from the car.
What?
I mean it, Bob. You might as well drive right on by.
Well, okay, but this is ridiculous. Susan, you'd better make up your mind to it. We've got to go back to that hotel.
No.
But there's going to be a storm.
Well, I'm in the mood for one.
But, Susan, we can't keep on driving. We're running low on gas. Now, look, if you don't let me turn around pretty soon, we may not even make it back to the hotel.
Well, there's plenty of gas stations.
Where? In the woods? Doggone it, Susan. You've got to listen to reason. There goes the motor plane, Camille.
What do you mean?
She's coughing her last.
Is that it?
That's it. And here we are. And it looks like there's going to be a cloudburst.
But what are you going to do?
I'm sure I don't know.
But surely under these circumstances, there's some place we can get gas.
I don't know where. I haven't any in my fountain pen.
Well, you don't have to shout.
Who's shouting?
You are. This is all your fault.
My fault? Who didn't want to stop at the hotel?
Well, you could have planned things better. Why are we out of gas?
Because on my honeymoon, I've had other things on my mind.
David would have thought of filling the gas tank.
David, why didn't you marry David?
That's the second time you've asked me that. You don't love me.
Oh, cut it out. And don't start crying.
I'm not crying. You're not worth it.
Now, look what you've started. Oh, I hope you're satisfied. Oh, this is great. Huh? With a leaky top. Oh, well, come on. We can't stay here.
Where are we going?
There's a mailbox up ahead. Must be a house back off the road.
Can't we go back to the hotel?
Oh, now she asks me.
But it couldn't be very far.
Only a half mile or more in a driving rain. And those shoes you're wearing aren't exactly mudslides.
That's the kindest thing you've said.
Don't mention it. Come on. Ah, it's a house, all right. Here, give me a hand. We'll run.
I don't need any help. Go ahead and... Oh, I've lost a heel.
Oh, counting me, that's two you've lost today. Now, do you want to walk through this mud in your stocking feet, or will you let me carry you? Don't answer that. You're trying to be carried, whether you like it or not.
Don't you touch me, Bob Bingston. Put me down, you hear?
Quiet, I'll drop you in a mud puddle.
Oh, just wait till I get back to civilization. What I'll have to say to the judge...
Okay, Mrs. Bingston, here we are.
Oh, put me down. And don't call me Mrs. Bingston.
I'm sorry, darling, but that's something even you can't change till you see the judge. Hope somebody lives here.
Well, if it's a lawyer, he's got a client.
Temper.
Coming.
Oh, we're in luck.
Is that... Oh. Don't
be frightened. We're not selling anything.
Young people.
I'm sorry to bother you, but you see, our car ran out of gas.
Young people, and in trouble. Well, come in. Come in out of the rain, children. Oh, my dear, look at you. You're wet to the skin. Why didn't you put your coat around her, young man?
Well...
Never mind. Get inside now, both of you.
Thank you.
Over there by the fire.
Oh, I'm afraid we'll track mud all over your nice clean rug.
Oh, no matter. Do as I say. Over by the fire. Quick, the both of you. And don't worry about anything. Of course, you'll stay right here tonight.
Oh, no, but that won't be necessary, Mrs. Lawson.
Mrs. Tom Lawson.
Thank you. I'm Susan Adams.
Susan Bingston, dear, remember? And I'm Bob Bingston.
Newlyweds. Well, I do declare. Oh, don't mind, my dear. It was easy for me not to remember my new name either.
Strange. I never have a bit of trouble.
Mrs. Lawson, what I started to say, you really won't have to put us up for the night. If you can just let us use a telephone.
Telephone? Oh, I'm sorry. I haven't one.
What? Oh, but if you haven't a phone, there's no way we can get help until...
Until morning. Now, isn't that nice?
Nice?
That you're going to stay, I mean.
Well, we hate to impose, but... perhaps if you could just put us up for the night.
But, young man, it's all settled and no trouble at all. And don't you worry, my dear. Your honeymoon trip isn't going to get off to a bad start. My room is very lovely, and you two shall have it. I'll fix up the spare room for myself.
Well, won't that be perfectly ducky, darling?
Oh, but we can't ask you to give up your room, Mrs. Lawson. I don't mind sleeping here on the couch, and, well, Bob can...
Now, child. You heard your master's voice. You must learn to agree with him. And he's quite right. It will be perfectly ducky.
Falls on Act One of It Takes Two, starring Anne Jeffries. Our charming star and our distinguished cast of La Rosa radio players return shortly for Act Two of It Takes Two.
Wait a minute, C.P. It only takes one.
One what, Wendell?
It only takes one package. That's 1 full pound of La Rosa macaroni, spaghetti, or egg noodles to make a wonderful big meal for the entire family. For instance, our tempting chicken macaroni casserole a La Rosa. And the recipe is so simple, ladies. All you need is La Rosa elbow macaroni. Mmm, those luscious golden elbows. Some leftover chicken and a few other ingredients. Bake in a casserole dish until the top is a bubbly golden brown. Ah, there's flavor through and through. Satisfying, healthfully nutritious, economical too. For the detailed recipe and 100 other wonderful La Rosa treats, consult your La Rosa cookbook. Now back to the La Rosa Hollywood Theater of Stars and our famous producer, C.P. McGregor.
And now, the second act of our play, It Takes Two, starring Anne Jeffries. We find our unhappy young couple, Mr. and Mrs. Robert Bingston, still out of gas and out of sorts. Taking refuge from the storm in the Maine Woods cottage of Mrs. Tom Lawson, Mrs. Lawson, a little Dresden doll sort of old lady, is doing her best to assure the couple that their wedding trip isn't going to be spoiled. As they finish dinner, neither Bob nor Susan has had the heart to tell her that not only the trip, but their marriage is already spoiled, and that they are planning divorce.
There now, children. Doesn't that make you feel better?
Oh, the dinner was very lovely, Mrs. Lawson. Yeah, I'd sure like to know how to make that salad.
Of course you would. You'll want to know how to make everything for your young man. I have lots of recipes, my dear.
Oh, I'm afraid she'd never have the patience to fix a meal like that.
Yeah, what are you saying? You're starting out all wrong, son. All wrong indeed. You must eat everything she cooks for you. Yes, and like it, too. Before long, you'll find yourself really liking it. Don't you mind him, dear?
I don't. Can I help with the dishes?
Dishes? On your honeymoon? I should say not.
Oh, but I'd rather help Mrs. Lawson, really.
I think she would, too.
Oh, nonsense. I'm only going to clear them off anyway. I want to go upstairs and fix your room. You two go on in the other room by the fire where you can cuddle. That's where I'd be.
But
not another word.
Come on, darling. Mustn't argue with people when they're so nice to you. You mind if I smoke, Mrs. Lawson?
Not at all. Turn on the radio, young man. Music always helps.
Oh, turn it off.
But I love music. When I was a boy, I was with the Barber of Seville.
What did you do? Bring him the hot towels?
Okay, okay. But take it easy. Want to upset the old lady?
Well, what about the young lady? Me? Anyway, Mrs. Lawson will have to find out sooner or later.
You're not going to tell her.
Certainly I'm going to tell her. She's fixing up her room for us.
Is that bad?
Well, I'm not letting her give up a room when I intend spending the night right here on this couch.
Suit yourself.
Don't worry. I plan to suit myself for the rest of my life. I'm just glad that I found out in time.
I know that I'm like all the rest.
Worse.
You wouldn't take any prizes for sweetness and charm.
Oh, no. I won a loving cup once.
That was because you were in a bathing suit, not in a home. You wouldn't know how to fit into anything like this cottage and all that it stands for.
Children. Oh, children, what in the world? Surely you're not...
Fighting? Yes, Mrs. Lawson, we are.
But I don't understand. I thought you were so much in love. Why, you were only just married.
We've been bouncing around on the ropes ever since the knot was tied.
No. Oh, dear, no. Oh, it's this wicked storm, that's all. And the trouble you had with the car. I'm sure in the morning everything will seem different.
Oh, no, Mrs. Lawson, it won't. Bob and I weren't meant for each other, I'm afraid.
She's right, Mrs. Lawson. But don't let it upset you. This sort of thing happens every day. Maybe it doesn't happen as quickly to most people,
now, but... don't talk that way, young man. Now, don't say another word.
Oh, but what he's saying is true.
All right, child, all right. Only don't say it again, please.
Mrs. Lawson, what is it?
Do you feel faint?
No. No, I'm perfectly well, thank you, only... let's all sit down a moment, shall we? I want to tell you both a little story. Please, children. You don't mind my calling you children, do you? Because that's the way you're acting. I know. I acted that way myself once.
Well, I'm afraid I don't understand.
No, of course you don't. Because you can't see yourself, my dear. You can't see what you're doing to this young man.
There you are.
You be still. I'd blame you even more, except that men aren't supposed to be as understanding. They haven't the good sense.
And there you are.
Mrs. Lawson, I appreciate everything you've done for us, but if this is going to be a lecture, I'd rather...
Now, there isn't going to be any lecture. I only want the two of you to sit here by the fire for a while to listen to a story.
Well...
Go ahead, Mrs. Lawson. Once upon a time...
There was a boy about your age, son, and a girl about Susan's. Yes, just about. The boy and the girl were very much in love. At least it seemed like love, because they were happiest when they were together. Wonderfully, gloriously happy. And so they decided to get married.
And that killed it.
If you're not interested, you might at least be polite.
Sorry?
Well, it's all right. I have plenty of time. That's all I do have. Oh, but the young couple. Their wedding was very gay, very exciting, and they started out on their honeymoon. Quite like you two started out. Only, of course, they had a shiny new horse and buggy instead of an automobile.
They were better off.
Perhaps. Because they didn't go so swiftly. Anyway, theirs seemed to be the perfect match. Everyone thought so. And the whole world was music to them. Until the girl wanted to make it too perfect. Yes, people can live too perfectly. For without little flares of temper and tiny misunderstandings, they don't really get to know one another.
You mean people should fight?
If it's the only way to settle something, my dear, yes. That's exactly what I do mean. Providing, of course, that you're always willing to admit when you're wrong.
Aha, there's the rub.
Yes, young man, there's the rub. And the girl I'm telling you about, she was not only unwilling to admit when she was wrong, but she was too selfish to know the good that can come from healthy argument. And one day, during one of their little lover squabbles, she told him she never wanted to see him again.
He didn't go away?
Yes, the very next morning. And he never came back.
You mean she never heard from him again? Didn't he write?
He wrote two letters, apologizing and asking if she wanted to see him again. For many weeks, she was too stubborn to answer. Then, when she did get around to writing, asking him to come home, her letter was returned, unopened. He had gone away. Gone, thinking that she didn't want him back. But she did, so very much. And she knows now that his letters, his beautiful letters, were the last invitation she would ever receive to that wonderful life that they might have known together. Oh, Tom. Tom, can you ever forgive me? I was so foolish. So foolish.
Mrs. Lawson, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm very sorry. Oh, Bob. Bob.
It's all right, darling. Everything's all right.
Yes. Yes, I think so, too.
Oh, I know it's been a long time, Mrs. Lawson. Years, I guess, but... Well, maybe we can find him.
No, dear, thank you. But you see, there was an accident several years later. A shipwreck. Tom's name was listed among those who were lost. But he wasn't lost. Not really. Because he's here, in my memory. He's in this room. Everywhere. Always.
Of course he is. And he was standing beside you tonight when you told your story. He helped you, Mrs. Lawson. He helped you to make two blind, stupid children grow up.
That's right. It wasn't just you, Mrs. Lawson. It was the two of you, together.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And now, if you don't mind, I'd like to be alone for a while. You two run on upstairs, and don't think about me or this storm that's going on in the world. Just think of one another, because this is your wedding night, and that's as it should be.
Good night.
Good night, son.
Good night, Mrs. Lawson, and God bless you.
Tom, you're back.
Eh? Of course I'm back.
Quiet. Quiet.
Say, what's going on around here? Can't a man go down to the corner store for an evening without...
Will you be quiet?
Lila, what...
I'm sorry, dear, but they mustn't hear you. You're supposed to have drowned at sea.
What?
You heard me, and you should be proud. We've just saved a fine young couple's marriage from going on the rocks.
But Lila, drowned at sea? Why, I never felt better in all my...
Oh, another cold. Tom Lawson, I swear you're more trouble than a child. Every time I let you go out in the rain...
Child?
You...
Who's a child, Agnabbit?
Don't shout, don't shout.
Who's shouting?
You are, and stop it this minute, do you hear?
Why, I do no such thing. Oh, Lila, we're fighting. What for?
Because we love each other, dear. That's what for. It takes a heap of living to find it out, but I'm sure that's the reason, dear. Because we love each other.
Ain't it so? Come here, dear.
And so the curtain falls in the final act of our play, It Takes Two, starring Anne Jeffries. Anne, we're running a little late, but I do want to congratulate you on a delightful performance.
Thank you, C.P. You're very kind. And I hope your nice audience liked the show.
With you as the star, how could we miss? But Anne, be sure to listen tomorrow when we bring you America's foremost writer of the Purple Sage, a star known to every person in the country, and an idol of American boys and girls everywhere, Roy Rogers. Yes, Roy will star in a half-hour action-packed romance titled Go West, Young Man. Be sure to join us tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen, won't you? Until then, thanks for listening, and cheerio from Hollywood.
The La Rosa Hollywood Theater of Stars on Tuned to Yesterday from March 31st, 1949, a syndicated broadcast. It's an hour of romance on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier. On the way next, a well-directed broadcast of romance. Norman McDonnell, one of the most sought-after director-producers during radio's yesteryear, is at the helm of this broadcast from August 18th, 1952. In the very same year, in addition to his regular duties with Romance and Escape, he also directed the first broadcasts of series that would not play out too long, like The Black Book, Violence, and The Judge. but on April 26th of that year, he would direct the very first broadcast of Gunsmoke. Next, he directs the story The Old Man's Bride on Romance.
Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum, the refreshing, delicious treat that gives you chewing enjoyment, presents for your listening enjoyment, Romance. Bringing you the finest stories of the world's greatest romantic authors. Stories of the courage, the devotion, the adventure of love. All strung on the bright thread of romance. Tonight, the makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum bring you Sigmund Bird's unusual story, Old Man's Bride. It was a fine spring day in the year 1844, about the time Texas was negotiating a treaty of annexation with the United States of the North. A few years back, Colonel DeWalt and I had fought together in the war to take Texas away from Mexico, and then we'd retired to the Colonel's Caney plantation on the Brazos River, where we now live like a couple of Aztec kings. Well, on this day, it was about noon when I rode up from the prairie fields to the big house. The colonel was sitting in a willow chair on the gallery, drinking whiskey and spring water, as was his habit before dinner.
Oh, hello, Henry.
Colonel, you sent for me, sir?
Ah, yes. Yes. I want you to go down to New Orleans with Captain Santos. There's a special item I want you to fetch me back on the return voyage. When will the brig sail?
Well, we ought to finish loading tomorrow, sir. What was it you wanted from New Orleans?
What?
Well, what particular kind, Colonel? Jack, Bowie, Penn, Dirk, a butcher?
I didn't say knife, you young clown. I said wife.
What?
Close your mouth. I can see clean to your gullet.
But, Colonel, I...
Be quiet and listen.
Yeah.
Henry, I'm in the prime of life and lonely. This house needs a woman, but none of these sun-baked, corn-fed women. I want a beauty. Sure enough, good looker, with at least a smidgen of common sense.
Well, are you serious, sir?
Of course I am. You pick her, and I'll marry her. Savvy?
The colonel was a handsome man, big, red-haired, with muscles like a draft horse. There was only a little gray in his hair and none in his beard. You'd never guess he'd turned 50, but... He was never a man for dalliance. He was a man's man, as the boys he'd led in action could tell you. And I was with him those places.
Well, Henry, do you understand?
No, sir. I don't savvy a man sending another man to fetch him a wife.
Well, why not? Don't you buy my clothes, my tobacco, my whiskey? Have I ever complained?
Well, no, sir. This is a bit different.
Oh, Henry, I trust you completely. You've never made a mistake for me. Except that time at San Jacinto when you joined in the charge while you were supposed to be guarding our rear. That was the only time you've ever disobeyed my orders.
I'm sorry, Colonel.
You should be. Cost you your right arm.
Well, it'd have cost me my life if you hadn't ridden back and shot that dragoon who was about to put his lance through me.
I've never regretted saving your life, Henry. But I do think sometimes I've made you too much a part of me. How old are you now, huh?
About 26, sir. I don't know for sure.
The man's age. You ever think of marrying?
Sometimes I do, Colonel. But that's the good. Even a Texas gal wants a man complete.
Oh, fiddle faddle. You've improved this plantation more with one arm than anybody else could do with two. Except maybe me.
Oh, thank you, sir, but
why,
still, who...
next to me, you're the best catch in Texas, my boy. You're more than just my overseer. You're a landowner in your own right. When I die, you'll get a share of Caney. You're a man of importance, Henry, and reasonably good-looking, besides.
Oh, it hasn't done me any good so far, sir.
Oh, it will when the time comes. Well, let's go into dinner now, and I'll tell you more about this business of picking me a wife.
Colonel Early next morning, we rode down to the DeWalt warehouse landing at Velasco, where the hands were loading the colonel's brig, the Mariposa, with bales of cotton, hogsheads of sugar, and bundles of hides. The colonel and I dismounted and went directly aboard. Captain Santos, in fresh whites, greeted us warmly and gave Colonel DeWalt an ingratiating leer.
I hope I can be of assistance in this delicate matter, sir.
Yeah.
I hope the young Senor Markham here will not hesitate to call upon me for counsel and advice.
Mr. Markham will take care of it by himself, Skipper.
Oh, certainly, sir. I only may...
He has a list of supplies to be bought in New Orleans, and you can help with that. But keep out of what you call this delicate matter. Savvy?
Of course, Coronel.
Now, Henry, you sure you understand everything? You have the letter from President Houston and the notices for the newspaper?
Yes, sir. They're all safe in my money belt.
Oh, good. Well, Henry, this is the most important mission you've ever undertaken for me. I know I can trust you.
Of course you can, sir.
Well, God be with you, my boy. I'll bid you goodbye now.
I'll do my best, Colonel. Goodbye, sir. Later, we came in tow into the great noisy harbor of New Orleans and found a mooring at the foot of Bienville Street. I went ashore at once. I stopped by the newspaper office to leave the notices advertising for the colonel's bride and then took a suite at the St. Charles Hotel. By noon next day, I had received some 20 applicants, only one of which seemed to meet the qualifications.
I'm Miss Fanny Langton. Do you recognize my name, Mr. Markham?
I seem to, but I'm not sure where.
I'm playing at the American Theater. The Lady and the Devil, you know. I'm cast as the lady.
Of course. But I don't attend the theater. I must have seen your name in the newspaper.
Tell me, Mr. Markham, what would you like to know about me that you cannot see?
Oh, you're very beautiful, Miss Langton.
Yes.
Are you, famous actress?
Heavens, no. I'm not even a very good one. And I'm sure I'll never be famous. It's just that theater is all I know. My father was an actor. He died poor and unhappy.
Oh, I see.
I'm not as young as I look, either. And I think I'd rather be the wife of a Texas planter than an aging and mediocre actress. Tell me, how old is Colonel DeWalt?
Hey, he's 52, but you'd never know it. Over there is a portrait of him I brought along if you'd care to look at it.
He has a good face, what I can see of it. That beard. Do you suppose he could be persuaded to part with it?
Well, I can't imagine the colonel without his beard.
But what can one really tell about a man with a full beard?
Colonel DeWalt is the finest man I ever knew. And I knew General Austin. I know President Houston and General Mirabeau Lamar.
And of those four, how many wore beards?
Well, come to think of it, only Colonel DeWalt.
There, you see? And now, thank you, Mr. Markham. I'll think it over and let you know. Goodbye.
Yes, of course. Goodbye, Miss Langton. A lovely creature, Fanny Langton. But her directness was disconcerting, and anyway, I knew the colonel would never stand for taking off his beard. Next morning, there was business to attend to and supplies to be bought. I went out and got as far as Banks Arcade, where I noticed a large crowd gathered in front of a drug and medicine store. A tall gentleman in a silk hat was standing on a dais delivering a lecture, and next to him was the loveliest girl I'd ever seen. There was a sweetness about her, a clean, radiant eagerness. She was like a Texas girl who'd stayed in the shade and never tasted cornbread. I pushed my way through the throng.
That was the wisest dollar you ever invested. And now, ladies and gentlemen, you see before you my assistant, Miss Olivia Sanifer, formerly of Mobile, Alabama. Now, this lovely child is the living proof of the wondrous powers of Dr. Castilian's celebrated anti-scorbutic and restorative compound. It cures, ladies and gentlemen. It cures consumption, tenesmus, pleentery, diseases caused by the scorbutic virus, wasting diseases, blood humors, slow intermittent and continual fevers. Would you believe that this beautiful girl, less than 6 months ago, was a poor, sickly creature with scarcely enough strength to lift the dasher of a churn? Well, my friend, it's the gospel truth. And what produced this miraculous change? I'll tell you.
I'll take 100 bottles, doctor.
Did you say 100, sir?
I did, but I'll expect a reasonable discount, of course.
Well, certainly, sir. Miss Olivia, will you conduct this gentleman into the store and fill his order? Charge him the wholesale price.
Follow me, sir.
Yes, friend. I discovered this amazing formula while serving as personal surgeon to the King of Santo Domingo, in whose service I was honored and decorated time and again.
The wholesale discount is 50%, sir. 100 bottles would be exactly $50, and no charge for drayage in the city. You want them delivered, I expect.
If you will, send them to the Brig Mariposa, Santos, Master, foot of Bienville Street. Issue the receipt to me, Henry Markham, of Caney Plantation, Brazoria County, Republic of Texas.
Yes, sir. I want to thank you, Mr. Markham, for getting me a raise of wages.
I don't understand.
When I read about you in the newspapers, I told Dr. Castillian he'd have to pay me $10 a month more, or I'd go straight to the St. Charles Hotel and promise to marry this rich planter out in Texas.
Tell me, Miss Olivia, would you have done it?
Oh, no. Well, after all, your Colonel What's-His-Name wouldn't have me.
Oh, you're wrong. He'd have you all right.
But I'm nobody. I haven't any kinfolk left, and Dr. Castillian's my only friend. But tell me, what's he like, this colonel you work for?
Oh, Colonel DeWalt, he's the finest man that ever breathed, Miss Olivia.
Where did you meet him?
Well, I was a sergeant of volunteers in his own company, and then in the spring of 36, he made me a platoon leader. That's when we stopped running and turned back to face Santa Ana's armies at San Jacinto.
Was that where you lost your arm?
Yes, a piece of grape shot hit me. Colonel DeWalt saved my life.
No wonder you're grateful to him. But what happened afterwards, after the war?
Well, he took me to Caney with him. It wasn't much then. The house had been burned. The stock was gone. The fields lay ruined.
But you built it all up again.
Oh, yes. The colonel made me his overseer and treated me like an only son. I've worked hard for him, but now Caney Plantation is worth millions.
He must be a wonderful man, Mr. Markham.
The colonel would be fortunate to have you as his wife.
How soon could we leave for Texas?
Then you'll come?
Yes, Mr. Markham, if you want me to.
We'll leave as soon as you're ready.
Whenever you say.
President Houston and General Mirabel Lamar will be guests at the wedding.
Oh, how wonderful. Oh,
then can you meet me at the St. Charles Hotel at 1 o'clock?
I'll be there.
Oh, you've solved a great problem for me, Miss Olivia.
I'm glad, Mr. Markham.
Night, Miss Olivia Stanifer and I had supper aboard Colonel DeWalt's brig, and I must say that Olivia was even more beautiful than when I had first seen her. I watched her in her new gray traveling suit and thought how pleased the colonel would be with his bride. Everything was fine, and maybe it would have come off as planned, but for the storm that overtook us the second day at sea. Olivia and I were sitting in the main saloon about midday.
Does the colonel ever go to New Orleans himself, Henry?
Oh, very seldom anymore. He prefers to stay on the plantation. Why?
I just thought. It might grow lonely there.
It sounds so wild and far away.
Yes, I suppose it is. That's why the colonel wants to get married.
I'm glad you'll be there, Henry.
Well, of course, I'll be away part of the time. The colonel gave me 7,000 acres of Brazos River bottomland of my own. I'm thinking of building a house there.
A house?
Mm.
Then you're going to get married, too?
Oh, no, no, not me. I'll never get married.
But, Henry, how do you know?
Who'd have me?
Oh, that's it. Henry, you're proud because of your arm. And you've grown a little hard and bitter, fighting against the pity of two armed people. Isn't that so?
Oh, I don't know.
Of course it's true. But I don't pity you. Do you understand? I have no pity at all for you.
I felt that about you from the beginning. And I thank you, Olivia.
I imagine Colonel DeWalt feels the same way about you, doesn't he?
Oh, yes. Yes, he does.
Then let's talk no further about it.
Senor Markham.
Oh, hello, Captain.
Oh, Senorita. You are as lovely as the Virgin of Guadalupe.
Thank you, Captain Santos.
Colonel DeWalt will be a very proud man.
How are we doing, Captain? Will we make Velasco on schedule?
I do not know, Senor. I came to tell you that we are running into a storm.
Storm? How about a storm?
Oh, there will be no danger, but it will be rough for a day, maybe two.
Oh, how exciting. I love storms.
There's no way to avoid it, Captain?
I'm afraid not, Senor.
But, Henry, you're not afraid of a storm, are you?
No, it isn't that. It's just that I'm strictly a fair-weather sailor. I don't do too well in a rough sea.
Ah, yes. Poor Senor Markham.
When do you expect a storm, Captain?
In a couple of hours, we will run into the edge of it.
Oh. Well, let's go on deck, Olivia. I won't be much company for you once it begins.
I'm so sorry, Henry.
By evening, the brig was riding on her beam ends, and I had become shamefully ill. However, Olivia insisted on nursing me herself. Hour after hour, she sat in my cabin, and it was both humiliating and wonderful to have her tender sympathy. The storm lasted 3 days, and when it was over, I was finally able to sit up in my bunk and sip broth from a spoon held in the strong, fair hand of the girl I had chosen to be the colonel's bride.
My father was a fisherman. I'm a good sailor. And, of course, I've never been sick a day in my life.
Well, then, Dr. Castilian lied about you.
Of course. You really believe what he said about me? Oh, Henry. In some ways, you're like a little boy. A dear little boy.
Olivia, you mustn't.
And yet you're a man, too. A good, wonderful man, Henry.
Olivia, there's something I must tell you.
Yes, Henry.
Something's happened that I didn't quite figure on.
I know.
You know? But how could you?
Because it happened to me, too.
Oh, my darling.
Henry, my love.
I have never been in love before, Olivia.
Nor I, ever.
Now I know why I've never looked at another woman.
Imagine. Meeting the way we did.
Oh, I'm glad you're out of that. It hurt me seeing you used as a come-on for a spring tonic.
I hope I'm worthy of you, Henry.
You? Worthy of me?
But I'm such a nobody.
Oh, to me, Olivia, you're the most important person in the world.
Even more important than Colonel DeWalt?
Oh. Oh. The Colonel.
What is it, Henry?
Colonel DeWalt. You're his.
No, I'm not. I'm yours now.
Oh, but, Olivia, we can't do this to him. You understand, don't you, after all he has done for me?
But, Henry, you've done a good deal for him, too. You've worked hard and built up the plantation for him. And you've lived like his son and kept him from loneliness.
Loneliness? That's why he sent me to pick you out for him.
So you failed him this once.
Oh, Olivia, Colonel DeWalt's a kindly man, but he's as hard as stone about some things. When he gives an order, it must be obeyed.
Are you afraid of him, Henry?
It isn't that. Don't you see? He trusts me.
And what about me? You'd give me to your colonel?
No. No, I can't do that either. No, of course not.
Henry.
What?
I wouldn't marry Colonel DeWalt now under any circumstances.
But, Olivia, you...
If you won't have me, I'll return to New Orleans. I'll go back to Dr. Castilian.
No, no, you can't do that. I won't have it.
And I won't marry Colonel DeWalt.
But you promised...
Henry, you're giving me away again. Don't you love me at all?
Oh, yes, of course I do. I don't know what I'm saying. Oh, this is terrible. Well, there's only one thing to do.
What?
I'm going to see Captain Santos. We'll be married at once, aboard ship.
All right, Henry.
And if we're married already, you see, it'll be over and done with. It'll be a fact, and the colonel is used to facing facts.
Henry, you've forgotten something.
What? What have I forgotten?
Why, you haven't asked me to marry you yet.
Good heavens.
Well?
Olivia, my love, will you marry me?
Yes. Yes, I will.
Henry Markham, Captain.
Senor Markham, come in, come in.
Captain, I want to ask you a favor.
Certainly, Senor Markham, certainly. We'll be in Velasco by noon tomorrow, and only a little the worse for wear, not so?
This is a serious thing I'm asking of you, Captain Santos.
Of course, Senor. Please tell me.
It concerns Miss Olivia, and...
Ah, may I congratulate you, Senor. She is so beautiful. Colonel DeWalt will be very proud. You have done a great job, Senor.
No, wait, Captain. This concerns Miss Olivia and me.
I do not quite understand, Senor.
Captain, I have a terrible problem. I love Miss Olivia, and she loves me.
What?
We want you to marry us.
Senor, have you gone mad?
No, not at all. We want you to marry us. Now, at once.
But, Senora, I could not do that to the Coronel. He would scuttle me.
Would you scuttle our love, Captain?
Oh, a tragedy. You bring me a tragedy. But I cannot marry you. It is impossible.
Well, why is it impossible?
The Coronel, I could not face him, Senor.
Then you refuse?
Please, Senor Markham, I cannot marry you. Miss Olivia must be delivered to the Coronel along with the other items he sent for.
I'll be responsible for that, Captain.
If it were anything else, anything at all,
All right, all right, Captain. Good day.
Good day, Senor.
Then what are we to do, Henry?
I know. I'll take my pistol and I'll force him.
But I don't think that would make the marriage legal.
Then I'll make him put about for another port. Or better yet, we can escape in the Briggs longboat tonight.
No, Henry, there's only one honorable thing to do.
Yes, I know. We'll just have to face the colonel and tell him the truth.
I won't marry anyone but you. So he's really not losing anything.
We'll tell him. And then go away somewhere and start life all over. We'll be poor, Olivia. I'll give him back my land. You won't have any fine clothes or servants or even a house.
I've been poor all my life. It won't matter.
Oh, you're a wonderful girl. And I love you very much.
Perhaps someday the colonel will forgive you, Henry. He can't be that cold-hearted.
Oh, he'll never forgive me. I'm sorry for that. I have you. We'll make a go of it somehow.
Of course we will, Henry. We're young. Our whole life is ahead of us.
Nothing will ever separate us. Come, let's go on deck and watch the stars. I slept little that night, and the next morning we sighted the Velasco shoreline and began beating up toward the mouth of the Brazos River. Soon, too soon, we were docked at the DeWalt warehouse, and I nervously searched the faces on shore for the colonel's, but I couldn't find it. Suddenly, though, I saw something that astonished me. I saw Fanny Langton, late of the American Theater in New Orleans. There was a gentleman beside her, but he was a stranger to me. As soon as we made fast, I conducted Olivia down the plank, and when we reached the wharf, it was the stranger with Fanny Langton who was the first to greet me.
Henry! Henry, my boy! Welcome home! We feared you were lost at sea. Thank God you're safe.
Colonel DeWalt... What's happened to you?
Oh, a great deal, my boy. A great deal indeed. But who's the lady with you? Aren't you going to introduce us?
Oh, yes. Yes, yeah, of course. My dear, this is Colonel DeWalt, Miss Olivia Standifer. And if you can find it in your heart to forgive me, Colonel, Olivia is my fiancée.
Oh, fiancée? Wonderful. Congratulations.
I'm confused.
And I hardly know you anyway, sir, without your beard.
Well, Henry, my wife made me have the beard off. But she's exactly what I ordered, my boy. Exactly and more so. And it was a brilliant idea sending her ahead of you on the packet. Oh, Fanny, my bride, come here. You and Olivia must know each other.
How do you do?
How do you do, my dear? And Henry, it's good to see you again.
Oh? I mean, of course, Fanny.
You'll forgive us, Henry, for having the wedding before your return.
You're married?
I think the Colonel and I were afraid you might find him a more suitable wife than I, Henry. So we had Judge McGee marry us the day I arrived. You will forgive us?
Forgive you? Forgive you? Oh, yes, yes, yes. Oh, yes.
But now yes. We'll have a big wedding party after all. That is, if you like the idea, Olivia.
Oh, I do, Colonel. Henry promised me a big wedding with you and President Houston and General Mirabeau Lamar as guests. Didn't you, Henry?
Yes, my dear. I did indeed.
Romance is produced and directed by Norman MacDonald and brings you the greatest love stories of today and yesterday. Tonight you have heard Old Man Bride by Sigmund Bird, starring John Daner. Featured in the cast were Gene Bates, Joseph Kearns, and Georgia Ellis, with Byron Kane and Peter Leeds. Editorial supervision is by John Meston, and musical supervision by Earl Towner.
Romance on Tuned to Yesterday from August 18th, 1952 on CBS. And so closes an hour of romance on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. It's been a pleasure.